wonder if you've ever experienced rejection. That's kind of a crazy question, right? Because it's very likely that you have in some form or another. I'm Becky Harling, the host of the Connected Mom podcast. And today we're going to have a conversation about moving past rejection and how to recover joy again. I think this is something that hits all of us. And so you know from listening to us in the past that the Connect to Mom podcast, we have real conversations that hopefully help you connect more deeply with God, more empathically with your fellow moms, and more intentionally with your child. And I have with me today my amazing co-host, Sarah. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Becky. You are so right, Becky. Rejection is so hard. And I think moms of all ages and stages can unfortunately relate to that, right? It reveals our insecurities. I mean, if we hold on to it, it can really rob us of joy. So I'm thrilled that we're talking about this topic because I think everyone can relate.
Yeah, I do too, Sarah. And I want to encourage those of you who are listening to lean in and listen well, you know, maybe take some notes. So our guest today is Patty LaRoche, and she's the wife of the former Yankee player, Dave LaRoche. That's really cool. We haven't had a former baseball player's wife on before.
MLB spouse.
I know. This so is cool. Really cool. You know, my kids would call her a double namer, Sarah, because, you know, she's important. And I actually grew up as a Yankees fan. So this is very fun for me. She's also a former high school teacher whose goal was to help students understand their immeasurable worth. And I love that. She also serves in Mexico with a dump feeding program, which is also so intriguing and so necessary. So welcome, Patty.
Thank you so much. It's so, so good to be here, Sarah and Becky. I appreciate you bringing me on and sharing this journey with me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what was your motivation for writing this book?
Well, I have a lot of really funny stories. I grew up poor and pretty homely. And so I dealt with a lot of feelings about never measuring up. That became the starting point. But then I found that marrying into the professional baseball world didn't stop that, because there were still wives who were thinner and prettier and richer. And there's a huge comparison game, even in professional baseball. And so it just didn't matter. Whatever my journey, there was just always someone there to remind me that I wasn't quite good enough. And it wasn't until I really started teaching high school and a group of high school girls came to me and asked if I would lead them in a Bible study that I appreciated just how deep the insecurity was in everybody. And so in the Bible study, these girls became very transparent, and they were kind of they were the most popular girls in the high school. They were the athletes and they were the cheerleaders and the homecoming queen. They had all this stuff going for them. But when we really started to dig into who they were so unwilling to even walk down the hall without feeling insecure. And I was shocked at that. They said, yes, we just think these people are looking at us and judging us. And I said, girls, if you think they're looking at you, what do you think they're thinking? And so it opened up all this dialogue in my classroom. And then the last thing that happened was every year my speech students would write questions intended for kindergartners. And we would walk to the elementary school and they would be paired one-on-one with a little kindergartner. And I talk about this in my TED talk because it was just transforming for me to watch these little five-year-olds who could do anything and who knew everything. And even if they didn't, they did. So if my student would say, can you sing? Yeah, I can sing. And they'd jump up and they'd start singing. And can you dance? Of course they could dance. Whatever they were asked, they could do. What my students didn't know was that 2 weeks before that, I had asked them questions in class, questions to which I knew the answers were yes. Can anybody in here play the violin? nobody made eye contact. They kept their heads down. And I had the gal that was first chair in the orchestra sitting on the front row. She never looked up. Can anybody in here ride a bull? I had a rodeo winner on the back. The point was, no one acknowledged that they could do anything. So when we came back from this kindergarten experience, I started talking to my students and I said, do you remember when I asked you those questions 2 weeks ago and none of you could do anything? What happened between a 5-year-old's time and a 17-year-old's time? Like, what has taken away your confidence that these, and they clearly began talking about bullies or coaches or parents or sometimes pastors. And I realized, oh my gosh, this is an epidemic. I mean, we are losing confidence. And many of these kids were Christians, but it didn't matter. They had somehow lost their joy and allow other people to make them feel defeated. And I thought, oh my gosh, between my experiences and the Bible study and this test that I did with these high schoolers, I thought it was probably time that I wrote a book on just how we need to deal with rejection.
I love that.
Overcome it.
Yeah.
So good. So I love stories, Patty, because I think they really teach us. And I love that story you shared about the kindergartners.
Yeah, I
know that there's a specific story in your book that we were hoping you'd share. It took place on a bus with the Yankees in 1981. That's quite a start to a story. Most of us don't have a bus in the 1980s. So tell us,
Sarah,
tell us what happened.
You don't want that story. You do not want that story. And it was the craziest thing. Well, again, Dave was at the end of his career, and there were young, beautiful wives, and they, a couple of them actually had Rolls Royces. I think we had a Honda. You know, the things have really changed, and they were beautiful, and the diamonds had become 10-carat diamonds, and just dressed with purses that. Anyway, things had really changed, and here we're going to the playoffs, the World Series, and George Steinbrenner was the owner of the Yankees, and he had chartered a bus for the players' wives and the players on the disabled list and all the stockholders. Huge deal. And so he flew us out to Oakland, and my girlfriend, Kathy, I'd been a flight attendant, and she lived out there then, and she joined me. And so we get on the bus, and I don't feel confident with these wives. I'm not dressed like they're dressed. I don't have the jewelry, and I certainly didn't fly my hairstylist in like some of them did.
Oh my gosh. That's a lot of pressure.
It was a lot of pressure. Yeah, thank you.
I feel it.
Thank you.
I feel it.
I still feel it. And so I had really long hair to the middle of my back, and I turned to say something to Kathy, who was coming on the bus after me. And all of a sudden I just felt like I was being pulled, like Kathy had grabbed my hair and was pulling on it or something. I'm going, what is going on? And then I start smelling smoke, and Kathy starts screaming. And I realized that my hair, as I turned to talk to her, had gotten stuck in the fan that was on the dashboard of this bus. And my hair was just getting sucked into this fan, and it wasn't turning off. It was just literally frying my hair. And it was causing me to do this back bend in the middle of this aisle. So anyway, it took the bus driver, I guess about a half an hour. He had to go get a mechanic, and they had to come and, all those little parts of the fan were stuck in my hair.
Oh, that's so awful. I didn't realize it took a half an hour. Wow.
Oh, it did. It took a half an hour, and it just chopped off all my hair. And of course, in the meantime, I had tears running down my face. I was mortified. And then I had to go to the ballpark with this really short, curly, frizzled hair. And so Bucky Dent happened to be the shortstop, and he was on the disabled list, and he was on the bus, and he ran into the clubhouse and told all the New York Yankees that they had to see Patty LaRoche because of what happened on the bus. She caught her hair in the fan, and it had burned it all off. So anyway, they all popped their heads out of the dugout to look at me, and I'm sitting there, and of course, Dave could not believe what he saw. It's like one more story of, okay, well, this didn't work out so well. The funny thing is, years later, I had gone back to spring training. Dave was coaching, and gosh, I can't even remember how many years later it was. But anyway, Gretchen Randolph was in the stands, and her husband now was the manager of the Yankees. She had been, her husband had been a player at the same time Dave was when my hair got caught in the fan. And she's in the stands, and I look up and I said, Gretchen. And she jumps up and she turns to all these young wives who have no idea who I am. And she said, oh my gosh, this is Patty LaRue. This is the one who got her hair caught in the fan. Oh. And they all knew the story years later. I mean, it's a story that probably still is being shared.
I mean, it is a great story. I mean, I think it so embarrassing to you. But, you know, we have those stories of embarrassment, right? And but, you know, you look at the professional sports careers, right, and their wives, and you think, well, certainly they don't deal with things like low confidence or feelings of rejection. So talk to us about that a little bit, you know, because I think we have a little bit of stardom, you know, we just have gotten through the Super Bowl. We've all been watching, you know, Taylor Swift in the audience of the Super Bowl. And I think people idolize people like that, right? So talk to us about that a little bit.
I think the Bible is so clear that we should have no false gods. And I think every time we set ourselves up to look at anybody, even Taylor Swift, who is a mega talent and a beautiful woman, I guess I look at her differently. I think, I bet this is really hard for you. I bet it's really hard to have people worship you and want to touch you and want to talk to you and stare at you. And we have so many stories of famous people who have had horrific deaths because they have turned to drugs or alcohol or suicide or whatever, because what we see is not what we get. And I think anymore, just because of social media, and Taylor Swift certainly deals with a lot of criticism, I think it's really hard not to take that to heart and not to start to believe that we are who they say we are and compare ourselves. And I don't know, I was so shocked in the baseball world that when you really, really got to know those women, because later I had a Bible study and many of them came and I heard their insecurities, and those Rolls Royces and those big diamonds and those fur coats did not masquerade the baggage that they were carrying many times from especially middle school and from grade school or from their parents or whatever, that they too never felt they were quite good enough. And I am telling you, since I've written my book, I've been amazed at the number of very successful men who have read it, who are writing me, telling me their stories. Very, very surprising. And some professional athletes, because they too are always under the gun to be better. And I had three sons who signed professional baseball contracts. One did not make it. He made it through the minor leagues. He never made it to the major leagues. There was always a comparison, and a sad one, that his brothers made it, but he didn't. And so that's a journey that never ends. There's always somebody in the minor leagues who's ready to take your place. So I think most of us deal, even in business, in the Christian community, in our homes, in our workplace, with the battle to compare. You know, if only I were, is a big, I write about that in my book. If only I were richer, taller, smarter, prettier, more creative. There's always somebody. And until we stop and say, and I think especially when we moms deal with our children, God has gifted you with whatever gifts, because they have them. God has definitely given them gifts. But to teach our kids to appreciate the gifts in other kids. And they're friends. You know what? Yes. Okay. So Sarah is such a good cook. I love eating Sarah's food. But you know what? God has made you a very creative artist or a very talented singer or whatever it is. And maybe it's not super obvious. Sometimes parents have to dig a little bit to find what those gifts are. But that we have got to learn to appreciate how God designed all of us differently instead of playing the if only game. I write in my book that Teddy Roosevelt once said, comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes.
And I truly believe that. I think as long as we're looking at somebody else, oh my gosh, look at Becky. She has this podcast and she's so good at asking questions. And look at Sarah's smile. I mean, we can do that using a Midwest expression till the cows come home. But we're not growing in the grace of God. We're not developing our gifts as long as we're doing that. So I think it's just critical that no matter where we are, if we're a professional baseball player's wife or an athlete or a singer or as high as you think you can get, they're still struggling with not being good enough until they make God the audience that counts. Mm. And that's what we have to do.
Yes.
What does God say about us? He says we're forgiven and we're wonderful, and he designed us with this specific DNA, and that's we are so special to him. Until he becomes our audience, we're never going to find joy. So
that's right. So good. I love that shift, Patty, because that's exactly right. I think that when we look for the approval of others, you just never get it, right? Because they're insecure and then they're comparing. So they feel, I mean, it's just like this vicious cycle. So I love that in your book, you write, we have to allow ourselves to matter. Wow. I'm going to say that again. We have to allow ourselves to matter. What do you mean by that?
I mean, it goes back to God's the audience that counts. So that when we go to bed at night, that's what we have to ask ourselves. Did I please the master today? I might have disappointed some other people. I might have dealt with some criticism, but did I please him? Did I honor him? How did I take that criticism? When I did my TED talk, they didn't want a lot of Christianity in it. They didn't want a lot of faith statements. But I did talk about the rewards of rejection, that through rejection, we can learn humility, which I certainly have in many, many, many of my case stories that I told in my book, that things happen and we're embarrassed and we're humiliated. But you know what? But can we be humbled by that? And the other thing is sometimes we just have to realize that not everybody's going to be our friend. And sometimes we need to ask ourselves some questions. Am I too loud? Am I too forceful? Am I too much of a mealy mouse? Do I always have to have my opinion be heard? Am I able to really listen to people and listen well, listen with empathy? What are some things I could learn that are going to make me a better person, a more humble person? So that's just one of the big things. But yes, we matter because we matter to God. Because to people, we're always going to disappoint. We are. And they're going to disappoint us, because until heaven, this journey is not going to be what we want it to be. So in the meantime, it's like we matter to God, and he's the one that matters most.
So when a mom feels rejected, whether it's by her friends, by her spouse, or even by her kids, for some moms, you know, the tendency can be to kind of build up walls to protect ourselves. And what would you say about that, Patty?
Oh, my heart breaks for moms today more than ever before. And I recently started substitute teaching again, and the family unit is in really, really, really bad shape. And I find moms who want so badly to be their child's friend instead of their child's parent. That's a huge, huge problem right now. And we're dealing with that on so many different levels. And of course, dads are doing it too. But we need to step back and say, what is my role in parenting? I may not be the perfect parent. I may need to apologize to my kids a lot for things I do as a parent, which I think is a great thing to do and teaches them to do the same thing. But as a mom, there's just such an incredibly hard, hard role right now. And even in the Christian community, that somebody's a more godly mother than I am. Somebody's making more cupcakes for the church social than I am. And we look at their giftedness and compare ourselves. And it's a terrible, terrible message for our kids when we do that, because we want We want them to see that we're looking at God's gifts in our lives and trying to develop those as well. But it just happened the other day. It wasn't a mom, it was a dad. But one of my teacher friends is an art teacher in the middle school. And mind you, I live in the Bible Belt. I live in Kansas in a small town where we're not subjected to a lot of things some of the bigger cities are. But she told me that the other day she had a student in her art class who was taking her little art stamps and stamping things all over her arm. And the teacher said, you know, you're not allowed to do that. I had to pay for those supplies myself. The school didn't. And so you're taking things that I've purchased and you're misusing them. And you know, that's against the rules. So put the supplies away and go sit in the back of the room till the bell rings. And I want you to think about what you've done. The girl walked out of the classroom, went to one of her friends and told her friend that she was going to kill this teacher described how she was going to kill this teacher. That girl happened to go to her teacher, who went to the principal, who called the girl in, and the girl admitted it. She said, I was mad, and this is what I said. Okay. Principal said, you know, you're going to be suspended, and I have to call your parents and talk to them about this, to let them know that you're being suspended from school for threatening to kill a teacher. The dad marches himself into this middle school. Now, this is a seventh grader. The dad marches himself in and tells the principal that his daughter has freedom of speech. And if she wants to say that she's going to kill the teacher, she has every constitutional right to do that. And of course, the principal told him why he didn't have that right. And he said, I'm going to go to the superintendent. Went to the superintendent, who backed the principal. Anyway, the dad comes back. Okay, so the superintendent's going to back you. So I'm pulling my daughter out of school, and we're going to homeschool her from now on. But she's going to come back to school tomorrow to say goodbye to her friends. And the principal said, no, she's not. She's suspended. She's not allowed back in this school until we allow her to come back in this school. Okay, the point was, here are parents who want so badly to be their daughter's friend that they're doing nothing to help this girl get along in life, teaching her she has freedom of speech to threaten somebody. And so I say that because we are seeing so many parents now who just want to do whatever their kids want. You want a better cell phone? Here, let me buy that for you. You want a better car? Here, yes, you deserve that. Instead of teaching them the good old-fashioned way that most of us grew up, which is, I'm going to thump you on the head if you're going to be disrespectful. And you're going to sit in the corner and we're going to talk about this. But sadly, when you set yourself up to be your child's friend, be their friends when they're adults, but not when they're children. So that's a huge issue that we're dealing with.
You know, Patty, I'm going to use a baseball expression. This might come out of left field. I love baseball, by the way. That's my favorite sport of all. And I know a lot of us, even if it's not baseball, we have children in sports, right? And let me tell you, one of the biggest moments of learning for me was when I put my oldest into T-ball, and he was terrible, Patty. I mean, it was, everyone was in danger when he was on the field, right? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, and here I played and I thought he'd be good like me or whatever. But I do, so this is out of left field, but I know a lot of us have our children in sports. And I wonder if, with your perspective, you know, how do we parent when rejection happens in sports? Because it's going to happen with
good
kids,
question,
right? I mean,
Sarah,
they don't get picked for the team. A teammate is a bully in them. I mean, it happens a lot in any sport. So anything that comes to mind as we parent, you know, what are some proactive things we can do to help them when they might experience rejection on a field, even?
And you know, at whatever level they're gonna experience it, and that's what I already talked about. Even in the big leagues, you can experience that. That's very painful to watch that. With the bullying, though, I want to just take a step back and address that for a minute. I am so much a teacher of how we act when we're being bullied or when we're watching somebody else be bullied. And I used to always tell my students, anytime that happens, we need to just stop and look that person in the eye and say, may I ask what pleasure you're getting out of trying to make me feel bad about myself? And those kids are going to cuss you out or tell you how awful you are or you're fat and ugly or whatever. And just, okay, that's what you think. But why is it so important for you to try to make me feel bad? And hold them accountable for their words. Now, I'm not saying there's going to be a magic turnaround, but it's a lot better than you saying something back to them. And the other thing that's critically important is that we teach our kids to stick up for someone else who's being bullied. Now, as far as, and say the same thing, why are you saying that to Sarah? Why does that make you feel good to try to make her feel bad about herself? You know, so those words are pretty powerful words. As far as our own kids, that is the hardest thing, Sarah. And my kids were not good runners. They were very slow. And that's where they would be made fun of, you know. Of course, in the baseball world, they were all good. They were all accomplished. So we were always at the head of the pack when it came to kids being picked for a team and or things, but they were not picked when there was a contest for racing or running. and they would be told, you know,
I don't always like running in baseball. That's not really one of our main skills.
Well, it's kind of necessary, but my kids just did not have that skill. So it's one of the ones that we just kind of said, listen, this is something you can either work on, or you can let this be something that for the rest of your life, you're going to allow this to be something you're going to be told that you're not a good runner. And even when they practice, they weren't good. they just weren't. But fortunately, they had other skills like pitching and hitting that kind of compensated for it. But honestly, I wish I had better advice than that, except just to say, find where they are gifted and let them know that this is not the end all. And the other thing is, things change. Some of those little kids, yes. Like my husband did not make his, I think it's the 9th grade baseball team.
Oh, intriguing.
Nobody wanted him. Nobody wanted him. Look at Michael Jordan as a sophomore.
Yes, I remember that one.
He did not make his basketball team. So the fact that they're going through that now means nothing in the long run. You know, and most of them at some point or another, my kids were not top draft picks. Adam, I think he was 30 something, and they didn't know he was going to make it at all because they knew he could pitch, but he didn't want to pitch. He wanted to hit. So everybody said, well, we don't think you're going to go anywhere. And he just ended up digging his heels in and practicing, and he proved them wrong. So just to have the confidence, though, to say, okay, well, what can we do now? What can we do to get better at this? But just let them know, just the fact that you don't make it in that, God's got some great plan for you. And it's going to be so much better than Little League Baseball. And what are we going to learn from this? And how can you get better if you really want to get better? And sometimes they just don't. They go, no, I think I'm going to go over here and learn to be a chef.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yes. Great too.
Yeah. Okay, so Patty, I have another question for you. What part do you feel forgiveness plays in moving past feeling rejected by somebody, whether it's, you know, a friend that rejects you, or I know a lot of moms of adult kids are facing, you know, kids that have rejected them now. And, you know, there's all of that. So what part does forgiveness play in that?
It's huge. It's huge. I don't know that there's any message stronger in the Bible, but more difficult than to forgive, because Satan has a way of continually bringing to the forefront how you've been hurt, especially, I think, by your kids. When your children hurt you, and I'm dealing with some friends right now who are going through that, oh gosh, they're just some mean people out there who choose to put you down. But God says you have to forgive. If you want to be forgiven, then you have to forgive. And sometimes I will tell you, I think the only way we can forgive is to ask God to forgive through us. And then when it comes back the next day, we choose to forgive again. We choose over and over and over. I have not been one who's been able just to forgive and it's dropped and it's over and everything's hunky-dory. Something comes back to remind me, or they come back and hurt again. And then it's got, oh my goodness, I have to one more time show grace, just like God shows me. And it's very, very hard to do that. Very hard. But and especially when your kids have been bullied, or you've been put down in a way that's been super painful. I write in my book a story about, and I'm not going to go into the details of it here, but it was a girl who gave a speech in my speech class, and they had to give a eulogy and say goodbye to something. And when she stood up in the front of the class, let me back up a minute. She was the one that sat on the back row with stringy blonde hair, covered her face with it, hardly ever looked up. I just saw a broken heart in her and tried so hard just to kind of find a place where she was successful and where God wanted to do something in her life. But she was a tough case. And so she stood up to give her eulogy, and her lips started quivering, and I knew it was going to be tough. She said, "This is the toughest thing I've ever done in my life." And she began sharing how when she was a little girl, all she wanted to do was dance. And that was her dream, to be a dancer. But then Grandpa had other plans for her. And those plans involved molesting her from the time she was 3 till the time she was 13. Now she was 17. She was a junior in my class. And she went into detail about how he pulled it off. And I was crying. The football players were crying. There wasn't a dry eye in the place. And at the end of the, and I actually include her entire speech in my book. I kept that speech. And at the end of the block, at the end of the class, everybody gathered around her. At the end of the speech, she said, "But I'm not going to give him that power anymore." Just talking about this had empowered her. And she said, "And I'm going to dance again. I'm going to start dancing." And there was just such joy in her voice at the end of that talk. But everybody came down, circled her, cried with her. And I, of course, kept her after class to talk to her, to find out if the grandfather was still in the picture. He wasn't. He had passed away. And I just remember thinking at the time, my gosh, there is such pain beyond the pain that I know, where somebody maybe said something bad to me or my hair got caught in a fan, I was embarrassed or whatever. Just like, I know I've mentioned to you that I do a lot of talks about sex trafficking, and my son is very, very involved in that fight. And I've met 2 trafficked girls and heard their stories. And I think there is a pain and a rejection out there so incredibly difficult to comprehend, but they choose forgiveness.
Yeah.
And those that do, it's the only way they move on. And it's the only way they get on with their lives. And so I think God commands it for a reason.
Yes.
That whatever we've been through.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There's so much freedom when we say, "It's done.
Yeah.
I forgive."
Well, Patty,
just like Jesus.
We are actually out of time, unfortunately, but this has been delightful. And so where can our listeners get in touch with you?
Well, my website is alittlefaithlift.com. That's the name of my book. Okay, great. Or they can just email me if they want that. That is fine with me, at laroachpatty@gmail.com. Last name, first name at gmail.com.
That's
and
wonderful.
I would love to hear from them.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just close in prayer for us, friends. And I hope you've been impacted by today's podcast, because rejection feels awful, but there is hope when you choose forgiveness to move past it. It empowers you. And so we want you to hear that today. So let me just pray for you. Lord Jesus, we thank you for Patty and her story. We thank you for those moms who are listening today. And we pray, Lord, that you would give them the courage to forgive when maybe their child's been rejected or they have felt rejected in some way or another. Help them to return to joy through the journey of forgiveness, Lord. We pray that you would empower us to do that. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, friend, thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Connect a Mom podcast. And we hope you're going to join again next week for another episode where we'll have another conversation to help you connect with God, connect with your friends, and connect with your child. And hey, if you liked today's episode, would you please share it with your friends? Because I guarantee if you've felt rejected at some point, your friends have as well. Thanks for joining us. Hey, all you moms out there. This is Becky Harling, and I love creating resources to help you connect more empathically with your child. One of those resources is a book that I wrote called How to Listen So Your Kids Will Talk. One of the greatest skills you can cultivate, really enhance that connection with your child, is the skill of listening. So how well do you really listen? This book is loaded with practical ideas to get your kids talking and to help you as you listen. You can buy it wherever Christian books are sold. You can order it on Amazon or anywhere else. So I hope you'll get a copy of the book and put the work into listening to your child.